It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dave Anthony. Today we take you to Ukraine, where it's now year two of the war against Russia. And while the U.S. sends more weapons and ammo and imposes more sanctions to punish Russia and those who help fund its war machine, we talked to a Canadian lawyer turned Ukrainian soldier about how, despite a year-long Russian bombardment after the invasion, killing tens of thousands of civilians, the country still stands and is not only holding its own fighting back, they're vowing to stop Russian leader Vladimir Putin and drive all his troops out in what has been a costly war on both sides. Hundreds of thousands of military casualties in all, Ukrainian and Russian. Now, the other day in our Rundown podcast, Dan Bilak was our guest. He grew up in Canada in a family of Ukrainian immigrants. Then in the early 1990s, as the Soviet Union collapsed, he went to Ukraine for work and has pretty much stayed there. Now he is a 62-year-old soldier in Ukraine. Our conversation went far too long to include all of it on Friday. Today, we have all the time we need, and we hope you find his story and the story of Ukraine compelling. And keep coming back for more of our stories and extras on all kinds of important issues. But now, Dan Bilak on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Joining us on the Fox News Rundown is Dan Bilak. He is a partner with the Kinsteller Law Firm in the head of the Ukraine division. He's also a soldier with the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine. And now, today, we're at 1 year since the Russian invasion, and we're going to go into depth as to what it's like and what's it been like and what may the future look like. Dan, first of all, thank you very much for joining us.
A pleasure to be on the show with you, Dave.
It has to have been like a long one-year nightmare, right, so far?
You know, it's been like a really bad dream, with lots of exhilarating and frustrating and very sad episodes in interspersed.
Sad, of course, when the invasion started, you had so many people fleeing the country, and it's been millions have fled so far. A lot of women and children left right when Russia invaded and the war began. But you said exhilarating because the fight against the Russian invasion went a lot differently than a lot of people thought. A lot of people thought that Vladimir Putin was going to have an easy way, and it has not at all been like that.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, I'm really skeptical when I hear of the Western experts in sitting in London, New York, and Washington, and other places talking about what's going to happen in Ukraine. Because these were the same people that said we were going to get rolled in 3 days, Ukraine was going to fall in 3 weeks, and we were all be singing the Russian national anthem by the middle of March. So everybody's got it pretty much wrong, because most of these experts are experts on Russia. And for some reason, if you're an expert on Russia, it qualifies you to be an expert on Ukraine, of which there weren't that many specialized Ukrainian experts. And, it's been, in a sense, it's just been a horrific violation that you feel in this country. I mean, we were a peaceful nation, never invaded anybody in the thousand-year-old history of Ukraine. Ukrainians just wanted to get on with their lives, make their own choices, join the West, trade with Russia, have family relations with Russia. It was nobody had any animosity at that point to the people there and to the Russian state. And all of a sudden, in one day, and I'll never forget when those artillery shells started to hit at 5 o'clock in the morning on the 24th. You know, as a civilian, you're just not programmed to feel that, and it was terrifying. It was really terrifying, and you know, 13 million people have been displaced. 8 million are in the EU or Canada, the United States. About 3 million in Ukraine itself, and internally displaced people. And over 2 million people have been either deported or having been forced to fled to Russia, including, you know, there's 500,000 kids of them that have been taken, many of them taken from their parents and put up for adoption. I mean, this is what was a shock to the senses for Ukrainians, was that, you know, they were brought up in the Soviet Union to believe that they had some sort of brotherly nationhood, common history, common culture, and a whole lot of other nonsense with the Russians. And all of a sudden, that was just ripped out of their psyches. And they couldn't, many, many people, especially from Eastern Ukraine, couldn't believe it. But it's really consolidated the nation, Dave. I mean, what has been amazing about this entire episode over the course of the year, and that, for me, the exhilarating part, is the fact that you've seen total resistance. This isn't about the Ukrainian army fighting the Russian army one-on-one. This is about the entire nation coalescing around freedom, around the notion that, you know, we deserve to be free, and that it's better to stand and fight and die on your feet, a free person, rather than to live on your knees as a slave.
The
Russians are.
You're a lawyer. You've lived in pretty much Ukraine for like 30 years since the Soviet Union collapse. Yet you're a soldier now, right? And you're not a young man, but you're ready to fight if need be.
Yeah, I'm not a young man, and after our training sessions, I don't feel like a young man. But it's very true. I mean, look. You know, I have a get out of jail free card with my Canadian passport. You know, I made my choice, though, Dave, a long time ago. My younger children are here. My family's here. Everything I have is in Ukraine. This is what I identify with. I love these people fiercely. I love this country fiercely, its language, its culture, its history. And it deserves to be defended. And this just offends every single democratic bone in my body, and I hope everybody else's body that's brought up in a democratic society, because this is really an assault on freedom. This is a, you know, a genocidal, terrorist, chauvinistic empire that has determined that Ukrainians do not exist. They do not have the right to exist. Ukraine is an artificial construct. And by the way, guess what? You're all Russians, and we're here to liberate you. I mean, it's obscene, as well as absurd. And Ukrainians aren't going to stand for it. Even people who were fairly well disposed to the Russians have stood up and fought, and will continue to fight. I mean, we have a recent survey showed that 89% of Ukrainians have said that they would continue to fight to the end, even if Putin used nuclear warheads and nuclear bombs in Ukraine. Nobody wants to give up a single piece of territory. And to all the people that say negotiate away your territory to bring peace, that is a false option.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have watched from afar cities like Mariupol reduced to pretty much rubble, yet there is no one who seems to have caved. I think a lot of people may have thought in the West that you would have been, that Ukrainians would have given up at some point, say, please stop. But they haven't.
Well, I mean, freedom is part of the Ukrainian DNA. It's as close a thing as we have to a national religion as you can get. And, you know, it comes back also to the point I was just making about this being a genocidal war. This is a war of extermination and annihilation, Dave. I mean, these are they are here to wipe us out. If people identify as Ukrainians, they are determined by the Russians to be fascists and Nazis, and therefore they are free game to be killed. Doesn't matter whether you're 2, 12, 20, or 90 years of age, or what your sex is. And, you know, when you're faced with a war of extermination and annihilation, you have no choice but to win. Because if you don't win, you die. And again, coming back to this issue of people surrendering, every piece of Ukrainian land that the Russians have occupied, they slaughtered most of the people there. And so you when we push them back, we find the mass graves, we find the torture chambers, we find, you know, the bodies of 10-year-old boys and girls that have died from rape inflicted injuries. I mean, you can't even process the kind of horrors that we find. And this is what this barbarism is, what we deal with all the time. We will never surrender. You will have to kill every one of us in order to take Ukrainian land. And by the way, you mentioned Mariupol. You can add to that, you know, parts of Kharkiv and Kherson and all the other places they've occupied. Their way of fighting is you just bomb everything to rubble, and then you hoist the Russian flag. And, you know, they don't value life. They're throwing waves and waves of conscripts and prisoners, you know, people who have had 2 weeks of some sort of training into a war zone, and they're being slaughtered. You know, over 200,000 Russians have died in or been wounded and taken out of the picture.
Is just and, about every, you know, Ukrainian doing something for the war effort?
Well, this is the whole notion of total resistance. Everybody is involved. So if you're not on the front, you're working for the front. You can be in the territorial defense forces, that the people like myself, who are essentially civilians, but, you know, getting military training. And we're the back line, we're the second line of defense. There are many of my friends have volunteered and or have been been mobilized into the armed forces. You have legions upon legions of volunteers. We have a very strong volunteer culture. I think it's something most Americans can relate to, that, you know, people are either providing humanitarian goods, medical equipment. You know, it's top to bottom. And frankly, Dave, had we not had that in the first 2 months of this war, because our military was not ready for the kind of war that we're fighting, had we not had that huge wellspring of volunteerism and the efforts of every Ukrainian in the country, we probably wouldn't have made it. We probably would not have survived.
Now,
and
Russia,
Ukrainians abroad as well.
Russia backed away from going after Kyiv a few months into the war. Was that a moment where Ukrainians believed, hey, we can win this?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was literally almost exactly 1 month to the day that they invaded, that they retreated. They were defeated, basically. And they did not accept. I mean, the first wave of military, of soldiers, Russian soldiers that came into Ukraine, we found parade uniforms in their backpacks.
Really?
I mean, they were here for a parade, not a war. They thought this was going to be over and done with in a matter of days. Yeah. And
so did a lot of military experts who overestimated Russia's military machine.
Well, that's right. Because they were all Russia experts. I mean, I knew I live here. I knew that there was no way they were going to win in 3 days. I mean, I just know the level of resistance. But I did not anticipate how fast everybody would just come together. And it was very decentralized, I can tell you. I mean, when the invasion of Kyiv happened, we were forming units both on the right bank in where Bucha and Irpin and all those places are, and on the left bank. And it was an amalgam of regular army, territorial defense force, and regular people and grannies. You know, there's this great picture of a granny coming out in the evening with a pail of borscht, which is a beet soup, Ukrainian beet soup, in one hand and carrying a pail of Molotov cocktails she'd put together in the other.
Wow.
For the boys that were fighting these Russian columns of tanks and armored vehicles. And they just couldn't, they just didn't know what hit them. They didn't know what hit them.
A lot of the fighting now is in the eastern part of Ukraine. Russia had already claimed to have annexed some regions, added to Crimea that they already took years ago. But that fighting seems to be getting ready to intensify. There's a lot of talk about Russia with a new offensive. What's next, in your opinion?
Well, some people say that they've already started the offensive. You know, we're seeing more intensity. But, you know, they're already all in. The UK defense minister last week, Ben Wallace, had said that 97% of the Russian army is already in Ukraine. And over the course of this year, Dave, we have degraded 50% of that army. And so they are severely weakened. But what they have a huge human resource. And they are going to keep doubling down and throwing bodies at us, trying to overcome us. And this is why we desperately need the support of our Western allies, especially the United States. We need ammunition. We're running out of ammunition. We're running out of shells. We're running out of rockets. We need those long range and medium range missiles for the HIMARS that we've been given that have proven to be so effective. We need the Bradley fighting vehicles. We need the tanks. Yeah, and we need more artillery, and we need to mow these people down. I mean, they just keep coming in wave after wave after wave. A friend of mine is on a machine gun, a heavy machine gun in Bakhmut in Western Ukraine. And he's telling me he's like psychologically damaged. He says, I have nightmares that all I'm doing is mowing people down, you know, 12 hours a day. And they just keep coming and coming and coming, coming, because I have nightmares over this.
That's almost impossible to fathom.
Yeah. And they just keep coming over top of the bodies we've already killed. They don't even clear them. He says the hardest thing to do in the Donbas is breathe, because the stench is so bad, even in the wintertime, from the bodies that are rotting there. It's just atrocious.
Because Russia doesn't care about, they don't retrieve the dead. They just let them just rot.
Yeah, yeah. We retrieve their dead in order to give them back to them so that they can have a proper burial at home. And, you know, so we really need this stuff. And we need to end this war now. We can do it, Dave. We have the people. We have the motivation. We need the rest of the equipment that we've been promised. And we need it in the quantities in which it's been promised, and we need it in an accelerated time frame. If we get this stuff by the spring, as has been promised, not in the fall, not at the end of the year, all of that's great, and that's great for the future, but we need to win the war this year. This can be done by the end of the year. And I mean, this is what our leaders, what President Zelensky is saying, what General Zaluzhny, the head of our armed forces, is saying, what the Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov is saying. You know, everybody's very confident that we can take the battle to the Russians and drive them out of the country. And we have to drive them out. Otherwise, they're coming back.
But what if
they're coming back after you?
But what if it doesn't go as well as you had hoped in 2023 and you don't win the war this year? You're already having some Americans who are like, you know, I think we've given enough, you know. Over $100 billion, maybe we can't constantly be giving Ukraine everything forever. So,
well, this
what,
is this,
what would happen
this,
then?
I hear this a lot. I hear this a lot, Dave. $100 billion is the total number. In terms of military assistance, it's just under $30 billion. And look, the United States and its NATO allies have been fighting the Soviet Union and the Russians for 70 years. At costs of trillions of dollars. You now have an opportunity to degrade and weaken your mortal enemy who has sworn to destroy you at very little cost. We're doing the fighting, we're doing the dying for what costs less than 4% of the Pentagon budget. We can get this job done. And, you know, for the American taxpayer, it's the deal of the century. because no American soldiers die. And if we don't push them out of Ukraine and they are left on Ukrainian territory, he is going to come back. He's going to try to take the rest of Ukraine. He's going to go into Poland and the Baltic states for sure, which means that American soldiers' lives get put on the front line and will likely many will die because they will be, those are NATO countries. And, you know, why would you do that? Why would you want to leave a resurgent, genocidal, terrorist, imperialist country, you know, on your border? It makes no sense when for a very small price and a little more effort to give us what already has been promised in an accelerated time frame, we can drive these guys out and defeat the Russian army in Ukraine. It's a no-brainer, Dave. It's a no-brainer.
There are those, though, who say, look, you could just make a peace agreement at some point, a stalemate, and say, okay, you can have this area of Ukraine that you've got, and then you go away and it's over and we have peace.
Really? I mean, I would be shocked. I would ask those people who are making that comment, what does peace mean? All it is a pause. It's not a peace. It means that he goes back, he rearms, he ratchets up, he works with China to rearm, which is happening now. This is a huge geopolitical threat to the interests of the United States. Not defeating Russia is a huge geopolitical threat to the United States because he will rearm and he will come back. And the scenario, I would bet my bottom dollar on the scenario I just painted. So there will be no peace. If Ukraine falls, Europe falls. That's ultimately what is going to happen. And a Europe, since the Second World War, the United States has sought to have, its policy has been, and successful policy has been, a Europe whole, at peace, and free. And if you leave the Russian orcs on Ukrainian territory, you will have none of those. You won't have a Europe that's whole or at peace or at free. So there is no peace if Russia stays on Ukrainian land.
What about Crimea, though?
What you have is a pause for something else.
Some people have Crimea was taken by Russia, disputed, of course, in 2014. Do you think that victory in this conflict is taking that back, and anything short of that is not victory?
I can tell you 90% of the Ukrainian people feel that anything short of that is not a victory. And if you leave Russia in Crimea, it means that he will continue to rearm. He will pose a threat, not just to Ukraine, but to other NATO countries like Romania and Bulgaria, and ultimately Turkey. He will control the Black Sea, which is a threat to shipping. It means he controls the export of Ukrainian agriculture products. We feed 400 million people around the world, Dave. And we've seen that there was almost starvation in Africa and parts of Asia because Putin cut off the shipments of grain from Ukraine. So, I mean, you know, we cannot afford to leave him in Crimea. And frankly, neither can the free world. You know, we cannot have a principle that you can invade a country and as an off-ramp, you get to keep part of it. I mean, all that is for a dictator is an incentive to double down and keep coming. I mean, people like Putin and Xi Jinping and others, they see compromise by the West and by the United States especially as a sign of weakness. I don't think the United States is a weak country. In fact, I was brought up to believe that the United States is the greatest, most powerful country in the world and a bastion of democracy for the free world. It doesn't mean that the United States has to be the world's policeman. We're not asking for American troops on Ukrainian soil. We've never asked for American troops on Ukrainian soil. We've asked the United States to give us some kit along with the NATO allies so that we can defend ourselves and defeat our common enemy. Defeating Russia totally in Ukraine is a victory for all of us. It's a victory for freedom and it's a victory for democracy.
What do you think the chances are I'm talking to you on the two-year anniversary, February 24th next year, and there's still a war going on?
I'm going to be on this show. We're going to be talking about the rebuilding of Ukraine. We're going to be talking about how the Russian army was defeated in the fall of 2023. And how the coup in Moscow is affecting international relations with the removal of Putin, China on the back foot because now it's lost an ally, and the United States defending its own interests and helping us become a full-fledged member of the European Union. That's what we're going to talk about with you next year on this show.
Dan Bielak.
In 2 years.
Oh, let me do that again. Dan Bielak, soldier with the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine. It was a real honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dave. God bless the people of the United States. Thank you for all your help. We couldn't do this without you.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.